I'm Anna Sale, in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We begin today with the terror warning and travel restrictions issued by the U.S. On Friday, the Obama administration issued a worldwide alert. Yesterday, after high-level national security meetings, the State Department said that it was extending the closing of 19 diplomatic posts in the Middle East and North Africa through at least next Saturday. Several European countries have also closed embassies in the Middle East. Lawmakers from both sides of the aisle say the threats are specific and credible, some of the most significant since 9/11. Those who take a more skeptical view can't help but notice this intelligence comes amidst a national controversy over the level of surveillance by the NSA. Karen Greenberg of Fordham University's Center on National Security is with us to explain what all this means. Karen Greenberg, welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
So I want to ask you first about how much precedent there is for this sort of move. I read that even in the weeks after 9/11, we didn't close this many embassies.
Yeah, that's what the experts and former ambassadors have been quoted as saying, and I certainly don't know of any time that this many, or even close to this many, have been closed. So it really does make you wonder why they're doing this, how much of it is excessive caution, how much of it is reasonable, and how much of it is owing to the political context we're now in this country.
And what does it mean on the ground first to close an embassy? Are embassy employees not going to work? Are the buildings themselves closed?
You know, I actually don't know all the details of that, but presumably that's what it'll mean. But the more important part of this has to do, I think, just in terms of the logistics, what it means if you're an American traveling abroad, right? And that's why you see this, there's been a warning for Americans not to go into these countries. That's part of this closing of the embassies. And so it's really an effective shutdown, even if they keep a minimal staff in and out. And that's what they're worried about, people being harmed at the embassies. Remember, Benghazi was nearly a year ago, and September 11th is always a jittery time in terms of al-Qaeda and suspected terrorism attacks. But this is early in a pre-9/11 worry field.
And you mentioned Americans traveling abroad, but what about alert here on U.S. soil? I've seen some pictures in the Daily News of beefed-up security on the subways in New York. One of our producers noticed that she thought she saw more security around a consulate. Why more of a presence domestically if the threat is said to be in North Africa and the Mideast?
Because you never know. You never know if that's why there is more of a presence, and it's not just there's still some lingering post Boston extra presence that's been here, as you probably know, since the Boston terrorist attack. So and it's because you never know, and because they will try to link things up. But the real question here is how does the country assess this sense of danger? And it's coming at a very inopportune time, because right now the trust between the government and government officials, government take on national security, and citizens is embroiled in controversy. And this is a situation where you want to be able to have good trust between what citizens are told and what the government is proclaiming. So I think they're going to do what they're going to do to protect American citizens. And then the question will be, what was this all about? And we won't find out till afterwards, probably.
So, listeners, we want to hear how you're taking this news. If you have any questions or any comments about these terror warnings or embassy closings, the phones are open. Ask Karen Greenberg of Fordham Center on National Security. The phone number, 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. But on that question of assessing the danger, let's talk about the intelligence that led to this decision. I want to play an exchange from ABC This Week yesterday between national security correspondent Martha Raddatz and White House correspondent Jonathan Carl. It starts with Carl.
They have developed techniques to evade Western security measures. Specifically, officials are concerned about terrorists carrying surgically implanted bombs.
John, people I've talked to said they don't really know exactly what the target is, even if it's an embassy or consulate. What do you know about that?
That is exactly right. As a U.S. official told us, we do not know whether they mean an embassy, an airbase, an aircraft, or trains.
So what do we know and what do we not know? You have John Carl saying one second that there is a warning specifically about Al-Qaeda sowing bombs into themselves, and then 30 seconds later saying that they don't know what exactly the target is. How do we know some specifics and then it to be so broad and vague at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, there's two things. What are they telling us, and what do they know? And the question is, who actually has access to the kind of information they need to know the specifics? And we're not being told any of that, and it's probably a very close circle that has the real details. Having said that, closing all of these embassies leads you to believe that they really don't know with any specificity what this is going to be, where it's going to be, if it's going to be, and what it's going to look like. And again, I know I keep bringing you back to this point, but I think it's important to point out that for all of this NSA surveillance that we've been talking about, it seems kind of ironic and disappointing not to be able to have more details if, in fact, those in charge don't have the details, and the closing of all these embassies would suggest that. And it also suggests something else that I think that we should bring up, which is if you look at the list of embassies that are closed, the 19 embassies that are closed, three are in Saudi Arabia, one is in Cairo, which makes sense, two are in the Emirates, and it suggests to you that the United States cannot rely on its allies in a way that they completely trust. Because one way to go about this would have been more quietly, less publicly, and to work with the allies on this in a quieter way. And they haven't done that. And so I think there are a lot of issues we're not focusing on here. And one of them is where the United States stands in terms of counterterrorism vis-a-vis our partners and our allies around the world, and particularly in the Middle East.
That's interesting. So who do you see as the target audience of these announcements of our closing 19 embassies? Is it intended to protect people on the ground? Is it intended to send a message that we know about these plans in hopes that they're abandoned?
No, I think the intended audience are Americans that might be harmed. And I really do think that, you know, whether and how you assess the intelligence is one thing. I don't think that this is just a political game about, you know, let's show that Al-Qaeda is really not disappearing. I think that the officials believe that this is a threat that they need to pay attention to, and the audience is, presumably, the people who would be harmed, the American citizens that would be harmed, whether they're working in the embassies or whether they're traveling abroad or whether they're stationed abroad in another government position.
So let's talk about Al-Qaeda a little bit. The one thing that people tend to agree on is that these threats are coming from an Al-Qaeda affiliate in Yemen. New York Congressman Peter King talked about that on ABC This Week yesterday. Let's take a listen.
This is a wake-up call. Al-Qaeda is in many ways stronger than it was before 9/11 because it's mutated and it's spread and it can come out of some different directions. And Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula is probably the most deadly of all the Al-Qaeda affiliates.
So do you agree with that assessment in terms of the strength of Al-Qaeda? We heard so much after Osama bin Laden was killed about how top Al-Qaeda leaders had been killed after the months after Osama bin Laden was killed. Have they regrouped?
Right. You know, it's really interesting, and they're being referred to as Al-Qaeda 3.0 now. You never know what that means, but what a lot of people mean different things by Al-Qaeda now, and officials mean different things. In some, they mean Al-Qaeda Central, Zawahiri, et cetera, you know, the post-Bin Laden Al-Qaeda. In other circumstances, they mean associated forces that have a formal affiliation with Al-Qaeda, like AQAP. And then in other cases, they mean just the narrative. In this case, they mean an extension of what was originally the formal Al-Qaeda, it seems, not just the narrative in Africa, for example. But the interesting part is our president in May gave a speech, President Obama gave a speech talking about the end of hostilities. Saying, look, the threat's not over, but we're winding our way out of this. And so this global, seemingly global threat that is causing us to take unprecedented action, closing down embassies, stands in the face of that sensibility. And so you really have to wonder a couple of things. One, why is the narrative not consistent coming out of the United States about what the threat of Al-Qaeda is? Given the fact that we've built up the most incredibly extensive military intelligence operational activity over the past 12 years, how is it possible that this comes with such force and makes us seem as if the only way we can respond to it is to close down the embassy. So I think there are significant national security questions here, not just about the future, but how we've gone about this in the past.
Well, there was an interesting op-ed in the Washington Post this morning that looked at the data of these new recent embassy closures, and it makes the argument that the head of Human Rights Watch said, let's admit that the war against al-Qaeda is over. His argument is that if the best al-Qaeda can hope for are these one-off attacks on Western embassies, then we really have been effective in breaking them up, that the concept of a war no longer applies. So that would seem like the president was saying the end of hostilities, that's somewhat consistent with now these threats about the closures of
embassies. You mean the end of hostilities,
yeah,
but the continuation of smaller
of threats.
Runoffs. Yeah. Look, that's what we're going to have to manage this threat as we manage many other threats as a country going forward. But when you have something like the headlines we're reading over the past week of all these embassies closing and an unknown but yet somewhat understood threat, but without knowing the specifics, part of being at war has to do with how you feel as a citizen of the world or a citizen of your country. And if you're told that there's a potential threat here, there, or elsewhere, and you don't know where it is, it does feel like a war, and it does feel like terrorism. And so I think that it puts off the possibility of thinking about getting through this war, whether you make a formal announcement or not. This feels to Americans who read the headlines like an uncertain, unsure, somewhat global situation as very discomforting.
Should we understand, though, that the threat is not on U.S. soil? Is that was a priority under bin Laden, one of his hallmarks, U.S. soil, attacks on U.S. soil. Is that no longer an al-Qaeda priority?
It hasn't been, and one of the things that the Obama administration has been very clear about from the beginning is that their goal was to take the war to them and to make sure that this war stayed in the territories that the various AQ affiliates or AQ-inspired groups was. Having said that, the other part of it is that terrorism always, since the pre-bin Laden days, since the pre-9/11 days, has often and always been initially and fundamentally inspired by local issues. And you see that now. That's why the instability of countries in Africa and the Middle East and the role of terrorist groups there, that often the issues are local. And what bin Laden did was keep trying to tie those local issues to the United States. And Obama has successfully said, we're taking it to them. And it looks like this is part of that plan.
I'm speaking with Karen Greenberg of Fordham University's Center on National Security, and we are taking your calls. The phone number 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Robert in Manhattan, what are you making of this news?
Yeah, Robert Barry.
Yeah, go ahead. What's your comment about this news?
Okay, well, it seems to me like the plan of al-Qaeda is working, and the plan is to immobilize you, freeze you economically, psychologically, and physically. So, I mean, is that what we will do anytime we predict a threat? We'll close the bridges, the tunnels, the embassies? I mean, is that a way to protect ourselves?
Thanks for your call, Robert. What about that, Karen Greenberg? Is this showing that the terrorists are already succeeding in some ways by closing down our embassies?
Yes, I think it's an excellent point, and I think it's why it's not the moment to say we can say that this is an end to the war with al-Qaeda. If it's going to be an end to the war with al-Qaeda, then we can have, and I'm one of those people who has thought that the threat is winding down. You can't have weeks where all these embassies are closed down in this kind of drastic way, because as the caller said, much of this is about economy, psychology, etc. And this will have long-lasting consequences, closing these embassies.
We are also getting some calls about the timing of this threat. David in Brooklyn, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I really think that this is, you know, it doesn't sound like they really have any real credible information. I mean, maybe they do, but I really think that it's very interesting that this is happening right when, you know, this NSA controversy is going on, and it seems that whenever something like that happens, whenever there's a homegrown issue here, suddenly there's terrorism afoot in other parts of the world or even here, and we have to, you know, shift our attention to there. And I really, that's really what I think this is about.
Thanks for your call, David. Maryland Congressman Dutch Ruppersberger addressed this on ABC yesterday. He made the point that we know about this because NSA has been collecting data. Let's take a listen.
The bottom line is that the NSA's job is to do foreign intelligence. The whole purpose is to collect information to protect us. We have NSA people going to work every day. This whole purpose is to get information against terrorist attacks.
So, Karen Greenberg, should we be skeptical about the timing of this global threat?
We could be, but at this point, it's probably not worth it, because when your government says there's a threat like this, you have to listen to it and take it seriously. It's like the boy who cried wolf. You can't be found on the other side of it, which is exactly why I think the important element in this, the trust between the government and the citizen, has never been in the right place since 9/11, and we're still not there, because I can understand how somebody would, like that caller, would jump to that conclusion, but you can't do that. You have to take these kinds of measures seriously and figure out afterwards just what was real and what wasn't real. In terms of the NSA threats and the clip that you just played, you know, you could say that if the NSA were working so well, we would know so much more about this. So I think that you can argue that one either way. So,
And to put a finer point on it, I mean, the controversy spurred by the Snowden leaks has been about domestic intelligence, particularly warrantless surveillance of phone and email records, tracking that data. Is there any evidence that this information came from domestic chatter, since these are about embassies abroad?
Nothing that I know of, and again, we'll find out. I do think, though, that the focus abroad rather than here is going to take some of the focus off of the Snowden information, but also, you know, makes you wonder. You know, they've been trying to say that because of Snowden, there won't be communications, we won't be able to surveil them, we won't be able to know what's going on. Seems that the United States has been, by its own accounting, pretty able to do that despite Snowden. And so I think that's also a part of the story we should think about.
Yeah, that seems to be an interesting point. I mean, on the one hand, it allows supporters of the NSA to make the argument that data collection is important and it keeps us safe, but also that this threat was encumbered after we've been talking about Edward Snowden for about 2 months now.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Karen Greenberg, she's with the Fordham University Center on National Security. Thanks so much for joining us again on WNYC.
Thanks so much for having me.
Coming up, we're going to talk to James and Deborah Fallos about their trip across America, looking for reinvention and resilience. This is WNYC. I'm Anna Sale, in for Brian Lehrer.